Hello and welcome to your GCSE Geography Revision podcast. I'm so glad you're here because today we're diving into one of the most fascinating topics in your entire geography course, how we define and measure development. Now, I know what you might be thinking, development? That sounds a bit dry, but trust me, by the end of this episode, you'll see why this topic is absolutely central to understanding the world we live in and why examiners absolutely love testing it. So let's get started. First things first, what actually is development? This is where so many students go wrong in the exam. They assume development just means getting richer, but that's far too narrow. Development is actually about improving the quality of life and well-being of people. And here's the key insight. It has economic dimensions, yes, but also social dimensions and political dimensions too. Think about it this way. Imagine two countries with the same GDP per capita, the same average income per person. But in one country, women can't vote, there's no free healthcare, and most children leave school at 12. In the other, everyone has access to education, healthcare is universal, and political freedoms are protected. Which country is more developed? The economic measure says they're equal, but clearly they're not. This is exactly why geographers argue that development is multidimensional. So let's talk about the different ways we measure development, because this is where the exam marks really are. The simplest measure is gross domestic product per capita, GDP per capita. This tells us the total economic output of a country divided by its population. It gives us a rough idea of average wealth. For example, Norway's GDP per capita is around $82,000 per year. Niger's is around $590. That's a staggering difference. But here's the limitation, and you must mention limitations in the exam. GDP per capita is an average. It hides inequality within a country. A country could have a handful of billionaires and millions of people living in poverty, and the average looks fine. It also only measures economic activity, not health, education, or happiness. This is why the United Nations developed the Human Development Index, the HDI, and this is probably the most important measure you need to know for your exam. The HDI is what we call a composite indicator. It combines three different dimensions into one score between 0 and 1. Those three dimensions are health, measured by life expectancy at birth, education, measured by mean years of schooling and expected years of schooling, and standard of living, measured by gross national income per capita. Let me give you some real numbers to anchor this. Norway has an HDI of 0.961. That's one of the highest in the world. The UK sits at 0.929. Brazil is at 0.754. India is at 0.633. And Niger, one of the lowest ranked countries, has an HDI of just 0.394. The HDI classifies countries into four bands: very high development, above 0.8, high development, between 0.7 and 0.8, medium development, between 0.55 and 0.7, and low development, below 0.55. Now, the HDI is much better than GDP alone because it captures more of what actually matters to people's lives. But it still has limitations. It doesn't measure inequality within countries, it doesn't capture political freedom or corruption, and it doesn't measure environmental sustainability. Examiners will give you credit for knowing both the strengths and the weaknesses of any measure. Beyond GDP and HDI, there are other measures worth knowing. The Gini coefficient measures inequality within a country. A score of 0 means perfect equality. A score of 1 means one person owns everything. The Corruption Perceptions Index measures political corruption, which matters because corrupt governments often fail to invest in education and healthcare, even when they have the money. And there are social measures like literacy rate, infant mortality rate, and access to clean water.
Now, let's zoom out and look at the global pattern of development, because this is where your map skills come in, and examiners love asking you to interpret choropleth maps. The most famous way of describing global development inequality is the Brandt line. Drawn in 1980 by Willy Brandt's commission, this imaginary line separates the more economically developed global north, which includes Europe, North America, Australia, and Japan, from the less economically developed global south, which includes most of Africa, Asia, and Latin America. Now, the Brandt line is a simplification. China and India are rapidly developing, and Australia is technically in the Southern Hemisphere, but is highly developed. But it's still a useful starting point for describing the North-South divide. The development gap is enormous. The richest 10% of the world's population own around 76% of global wealth. Sub-Saharan Africa contains most of the world's least developed countries. But here's something really important that candidates often miss. Development is uneven within countries too, not just between them. Take the UK as an example. London has a GDP per capita roughly twice that of Wales or the northeast of England. There are stark differences in life expectancy, educational attainment, and employment opportunities between different regions of the UK. This is called the core-periphery model. The core, usually the capital or major cities, tends to be wealthier and better connected, while the periphery, rural areas and former industrial regions, lags behind. So why is development so uneven? Examiners expect you to explain the causes, and there are three main categories: physical factors, historical factors, and economic factors. Physical factors include things like climate. Countries in tropical regions often face challenges from disease, drought, and unreliable rainfall that make agriculture and economic activity harder. Landlocked countries without access to the sea face higher trade costs. Countries with poor soils or limited natural resources may struggle to generate wealth. Historical factors are huge. Colonialism, the period when European powers controlled vast areas of Africa, Asia, and the Americas, had a devastating long-term impact. Colonial powers extracted raw materials and wealth, disrupted local economies, drew arbitrary borders that ignored ethnic and cultural divisions, and left many countries with weak institutions when they gained independence. The legacy of colonialism is still felt today. Economic factors include things like debt. Many developing countries borrowed heavily in the 1970s and 80s and have spent decades repaying loans with high interest, leaving little money for schools and hospitals. Trade rules that favour wealthy nations, lack of investment in infrastructure, and limited access to technology all contribute to the development gap.
Right, let's move on to exam tips and common mistakes, because this is where you can really gain marks. Common mistake number one, and this is the big one, confusing GDP with HDI. GDP is purely economic. HDI is composite. It includes health and education. If an exam question asks you to compare the two, you must explain what each measures, not just say one is better. Common mistake number two, only talking about development differences between countries and forgetting about differences within countries. Always mention the core-periphery divide and give a named example, like London versus the northeast of England. Common mistake number three, when evaluating strategies to reduce the development gap, students often just say aid is good or aid is bad, without any nuance. Examiners want you to evaluate. That means considering both advantages and limitations, and ideally referring to specific examples. Common mistake number four, vague answers without specific data. Don't say Norway has a high HDI. Say Norway has an HDI of 0.961, making it one of the highest in the world. That specificity is what gets you into the higher mark bands. Now, a quick word on development strategies, because this often comes up in 6-mark or 9-mark questions. Top-down development is where decisions and funding come from governments, international organisations like the World Bank, or transnational corporations. A classic example is the Three Gorges Dam in China, a massive infrastructure project that provides hydroelectric power to millions. The advantages are scale and speed. The disadvantages are that communities are often not consulted, there can be environmental damage, and benefits don't always reach the poorest people. Bottom-up development is community-led. Water aids projects in Ethiopia, where local communities help design and maintain water wells, are a great example. The Grameen Bank in Bangladesh provides microfinance loans, tiny loans to poor women to start small businesses. The advantages are sustainability, community ownership, and addressing real local needs. The disadvantages are that the scale is small and funding is often limited. Quickfire recall quiz. Cover your notes and try to answer these. Question 1. Name the three components of the HDI. Health, measured by life expectancy. Education, measured by years of schooling. Standard of living, measured by GNI per capita. Question 2. What is the difference between GDP per capita and HDI? GDP per capita measures only economic output per person. HDI is a composite measure combining health, education, and standard of living. Question 3. Name one physical factor that can cause low development. Examples include landlocked location, tropical climate prone to drought or disease, or limited natural resources. Question 4. Give one example of a bottom-up development strategy and name a specific project. The Grameen Bank in Bangladesh provides microfinance loans to poor women to start small businesses. Question 5. What is the Brandt line? An imaginary line drawn in 1980 separating the more developed global north from the less developed global south. Right, let's wrap up. Development is multidimensional. Economic, social, and political aspects, not just wealth. The main measures are GDP per capita, economic only, and HDI, a composite of health, education, and standard of living. Development is uneven, both between countries, the North-South divide, and within countries, the core periphery model. The causes include physical factors, historical factors like colonialism, and economic factors like debt. Strategies include top-down approaches, like large infrastructure projects, and bottom-up approaches, like microfinance and community water projects. In the exam, always use specific data, always evaluate both sides, and always name specific examples. You've got this. Keep revising, keep using those specific statistics, and you'll absolutely smash this topic. Good luck, and I'll see you in the next episode.